Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome into 20th and Blake here on the Mile High Sports Podcast Network. I am your host, Drew Kreisman, and as always, I'm excited to be talking Colorado Rockies baseball with you here on the show. And the trend continues. The Rockies have been playing much better baseball since that first road trip where they played absolutely miserable baseball. And again, very winnable games here in Toronto. Well, until this last one. The 5-0 loss on Sunday was the first one that we've seen in a while where the Rockies just were never in it and more or less got beaten up and down the field from inning 1 to inning 9. Other than that, we've seen since the home opener, the Rockies have been in every single game, right? And so I've got your downs, I've got your mez, and I've got your ups. But I was surprised kind of going through this, considering they still haven't won a series. They're sitting there at 4-12, and there are obviously several things to not be super happy about. But with, honestly, how few downs there were and how many ups there are so far, as if we're diving into this specifically, let's talk about these two things that I think are the primary things why they're losing despite playing better, right? One is, and you're all well aware of this, and I'm not going to dive too much into it because I do think there's an element of randomness to it, but it's the first inning. You know, all of the numbers about how historically terrible they've been in the first inning, the fact that they've been scored upon first in all but one of their games that they've played, there is an element of randomness to that part of it, right? The team can be bad and score a run early and still lose 9-1, right? So the fact that the other team is always scoring first is a little bit random, but the first inning has clearly become a thing, right? It's it was really highlighted in game 2 by Dakota Hudson, who I'm going to talk about more in the meh category of things. But 5 runs in the first inning, and that ends up being the ball game. And we've seen that a lot, that the Rockies aren't playing well kind of across the board at the starts of these games. This is something that Cal Quantrill talked about when they were here, pointing the finger directly at himself, you know, and saying, I got to come out a little bit less jumpy, you know, even admitting that that's where he's been. But the first inning and then losing the key play, that has been, the main thing throughout this course of games since, like I said, the home opener. Whether the key play is, you know, a flaring, shallow single into left center that Justin Lawrence gives up and it ends up blowing the save there, or if it's you've got the bases loaded in the 8th inning and you strike out and then hit into a double play, right? Those are the kinds of things that are costing the Rockies these games right now. In game 2 of the Toronto series, it was a compounding of losing the key play and making an incredibly bad key error. The Elias Diaz base running mistake was the worst mistake of the season so far. It might have cost him the game. It definitely cost him 2 runs. And I wanted to talk about it because oftentimes I think it feels like for some people out there that I'm giving excuses for other mistakes, right? But there are just... baseball is a game of errors. It's a game where you cannot be perfect. I know it's no less frustrating if the third baseman picks one up with a chance to get out of the inning and nobody, you know, bases loaded, 2 outs, chance to get out of this with nobody scoring. Ryan McMahon makes a nice sliding play and then he throws it to first and it skips past Chris Bryant, you know, whatever. That stuff is frustrating. Absolutely. But that is not if to use the phrase, you can't do that type of situation, right? It's that happens. You hope it doesn't, and you get the skills as high as you can to try to not do it. But forgetting how many outs that there are and not running through is really a different category of mistake. You cannot do that. And if Diaz was a rookie, if he was a young player, to reach into the back into the machine of somebody who used to get in big trouble for doing stuff like that semi-regularly, if that had been Raimel Tapia, he'd have come right out of the game immediately. You know, Diaz is a veteran. He has the respect of everybody on the team, and he's earned that. And he doesn't normally do stuff like this. It's not a pattern of his, but it really and truly was one of those things where I'm very rarely just floored by a mistake like that, because again, errors happen. And we even know that forgetting how many outs there are can happen. We all remember, well, some of those of us who are old enough, Larry Walker, right, turning to hand the ball to the person in the crowd. People have done that over the years. But when you're on base and your team is down by two and you've got speed behind you with Nolan Jones at first and a Laurys Montero who's really been struggling, like it wasn't even just that it cost him the game. It was that it cost him a rally where their young guys had been producing. Montero hits that ball to left. He should be coming in with a two-out, two RBI, game-tying double, which is what a Laurys Montero needs to feel in his bones right now, because despite, when we talked about this last time, his very good process, he's not getting the results. So when you end up taking two runs off the board with one mistake that was entirely a mental mistake, that was rough. That was really, really rough. Might have cost him the game, might have cost him the series. And when you are at a talent disadvantage against most of the teams that you're going to be playing, mistakes like that are going to cost you games. You just can't afford to be doing stuff like that. So that one, I don't want to belabor it, and I don't want to jump up and down on Diaz forever for it, because there's really nothing you can do about it now and projecting forward. But just watching the team battle, and especially after they were so good in game one, and you do have the young guys doing a rally again, that was a rough one. Still here in the downs. Of course, Kyle Freeland remains in this funk. He pitched okay today. He threw some really, really good ones. He threw some very iffy pitches right in the middle of the strike zone. He got tagged on a couple that were out of the zone, particularly, you know, to he could have salvaged a much better looking game at five innings, three earned runs. The fourth one comes in on a two-out, two-strike curveball that looked like it was going to hit the dirt, and Justin Turner's just one in a great groove right now, and two kills the Rockies, and three has always been good against Kyle Freeland. And so, you know, just kind of flares one into center, and you're going, well, okay. Now, of course, the bar was pretty low after his first two starts, right? So on the one hand, it's, I think, fair to say that Freeland isn't totally out of this funk. But on the other hand, his last two outings have been much better than his first two. As I've said a couple of times, and I think this remains true, Kyle Freeland sort of feels like a microcosm of the team, right? Terrible start and kind of okay since then. Clearly better, but not so much better that you're necessarily running away with, that was just a weird fluky start, right? You're still kind of in between. And then really the last thing that I've got here for us on the persistent downs, and this one is interesting because I think it was heading toward being a big up for this series, because Chris Bryant was starting to get his hits. Got a couple of hits in that big blow-up game, a couple of extra base hits in the series, a couple of doubles. But then he crashes into the wall, comes out of the game, made a nice catch, by the way, though he did get a little bit turned around. Still, made a nice catch, and misses the final game of the set. Now, we know, of course, that injuries are a big thing with him. So, you know, despite the lack of production at the beginning, there's this interesting thing now where you're like, well, on the one hand, if he does have to take a short stint on the IL, that means more at-bats for Michael Tolia, who started the year well. I know some people want to jump immediately to calling up Jordan Beck. I still think it's a little bit too early for that. But, and I also don't think, you know, just based on the comments that came out and everything that happened, that it's likely to be a long-term thing. Though you never know, and we've heard that before with Bryant. I think, though, that this is a reminder of why, you know, Bryant and to some degree Charlie Blackmon and some of these veteran guys aren't really blocking anybody. As I've often said, you know, their injuries happen, big ones, little ones, moments where you've got to sit. And when you do have these other guys that need playing time, if somebody's got the smallest of things, you sit them down and you handle it that way. Now, if this turns into a bigger thing, then yes, you're still stuck in that situation where you've got this albatross of a contract for a guy who's either not playing well or just literally not playing. And it's going to be tough for him. You know, the timing of this couldn't have been worse if he really was coming out of it. If you're a believer that Bryant can come out of this and contribute some this season and get the bat back to being a good bat, you know, obviously you'd want to stay in the rhythm where he was, where he's starting to make some good contact here. We'll see if he's back in there against Philadelphia. But, you know, the general Chris Bryant experience right now just remains, And right when it started to feel like finally he did, you know, it was a big go-ahead hit in that game. It ended up being a, you know, monster blowout, so you don't think it's the game-winning hit or whatever. But he was a big part of that. And then to see this is, it remains frustrating. All right, let's move into our meh category of things. And I'll stay there with the stars, the supposed stars who've been struggling on offense, right? Nolan Jones, better. We got his first homer, had some big hits in that game. Obviously, everybody did, right? But still, I still think we're seeing him pressing at the plate a little bit. We're seeing some of those at-bats where he's getting his pitch and he's just missing it. You know, I do think a lot of it is he's looking at a lot of upside-down counts. He's been very patient this year. In fact, he was, at least until a couple of days ago. I haven't double-checked this if someone's passed him since this series started. But he was leading Major League Baseball in pitches seen per plate appearance. He's been very patient this year, and I think he's really working on that. But it's led him to get into a lot of 0-2 counts, 1-2 counts. He's working a lot of these counts full. But I think what's happening, just as watching him the last couple of days, there have been a lot of times where he takes that first pitch, it barely nicks the strike zone. Okay, 0-1, so what? No big deal. The 0-1 pitch will be in a much more hittable location, and he'll foul it off. And now he's in an 0-2 count, and he spends the entire rest of the at-bat battling. He's been doing that a lot of the year, and it's just not working out for him. There were a couple of swings in this Toronto series that made me think, okay, he's making his adjustments. He's coming back around. Particularly, he hit an opposite field double on a pitch that was both high and outside of the strike zone. It was way up and away from him. And that's normally a spot you can pick on lefties with his type of swing. And he just went up there and poked it out there for a very impressive base hit. So Jones, I'm putting in the meh category because I do think he's looked better, but we still haven't seen him in any series yet this year look like a star, right? And I think that's something we're still looking for out of Nolan Jones, is when is he going to come out and have a game with a home run and a couple of doubles and drive in 4 or 5, right? I do think that's on the horizon, but I've also talked before about comparing it to Trevor Story's sophomore season, where he really went through the struggles, especially in the first half, ended up leading the league in strikeouts, was able to make those adjustments and have a much better second half. I think we're going to see a little bit of that out of Jones, and it's all going to be about how quickly can he make those adjustments. As I mentioned earlier, also in the meh category was Dakota Hudson's start. The first inning, as we've talked about, very, very frustrating, gives up 5. Walks in a guy, walks in a run, and gives up a grand slam. He had the batter before Varsho, Schneider, in a 1-2 count. So Dakota Hudson was at several points there, one pitch away from getting out of that. You get a swing and a miss, you get a ground ball somewhere, you get a pop fly somewhere, and a guy who's got an upside-down count, and no runs score in the first. But he couldn't find it. Remember when he was acquired, my big thing was watch out for the walks. He gets a little.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Wild, and the last couple of pitches he threw to Schneider were frustrating to me. That he went away from his sinker, that he's throwing breaking stuff in the dirt still after all that. Once you got him back to 3-2, just make Schneider beat you. Don't leave Dalton Varsho, who kills the Rockies. And then the pitch he threw to Varsho was just a get me over fastball. Like, I need to throw a strike. No, you needed to throw that strike to the guy before him. That was the pitch you should have thrown to Schneider. All that said, you know, I'm not going to overdo analysis of one inning in a season like this. What was most impressive to me was then he went back out there and got five innings. Like, that was a big eye-opener moment to me. I have often talked about this throughout history, with the main comparison being Jorge De La Rosa. One of the reasons why he managed to last 9 years in the most difficult place to pitch was because he had that ability to give up 3, 4, 5 runs in the first inning or two. And he'd have thought, man, they're going to have to go to the bullpen right now. He's going to be out of here after 3. And then he gives you 5. That's a big thing. And so I was very impressed by that. But he did still give up the 5. So I can't put him in the plus category here. I can't put him in the ups. But that was very impressive. And something that if he's got the mental ability to shut off the fact that he just gave up 5 runs on 34 pitches in the opening frame, and then keep his team in the ball game in a game they, like I said, without a key base running mistake, might have come back and won. That impressed me more than Dakota Hudson's first outing, where he was probably much better, because you're not going to have your best stuff. You're going to get rocked. This was obviously on the road, but this is going to happen at Coors as well. And so now I'm thinking a little more about Hudson long-term, but we've got a lot more starts to go as we watch him. And the final thing in the Mad category, Alaurys Montero, man. This is getting to the point where it's almost comical, though it's also really sad. Like I mentioned earlier, he's catching some bad luck. His process is locked in. And the biggest up of this is that he doesn't seem to be panicking. He's not coming out of it. He's not starting to have really ugly, terrible at-bats, reaching for stuff because he's not getting anything. He's sticking with his process. He drew a good walk today after fouling a pitch off of his shin and needing to roll around in the dirt a little bit. That looked like it hurt bad. It was a 100-mile-an-hour sinker that he fouled off of himself and then got up and drew a walk. I couldn't be more impressed with Alaurys Montero's process, but he's just not getting the results. He can't buy it. And then the one time he does get a big, huge, what should have been extra base hit to tie the game, and Diaz forgot how many outs there were, and so it just ended up being a single. That didn't, you know, he's got no ribbies, he's got, and it's just, oof. So yeah, he's firmly stuck in Matt territory because he can't get too down on the guy. He's not doing much wrong from a process standpoint, but you just can't get the results right now. All right, let's end on the silver linings for your team right now. Obviously, the game one explosion. Not only did they manage to go out there and put a crooked number on the board, but they did it against the guy who was third in Cy Young voting in the AL last year, and Kevin Gausman, the leader in strikeouts. And they really got after him. They made some great swings, particularly Ezekiel Tovar and Ryan McMahon managed to stay hot. They have gotten out to great starts at the beginning of the season with McMahon. We will always be wondering if that cold streak is around the corner until he does this for at least an entire half of the season. We've seen him before. We know how hot he can get. And when he's hot, Ryan McMahon is one of the best hitters in baseball. And then when he goes cold, he becomes one of the easier strikeouts in the game. And so we're going to keep our eyes on that, though his two-strike approach this year has been different. We've talked about it. It's been documented. Tovar, on the other hand, appears to be having another breakout season already. He's been fantastic at the plate. Obviously, he's been fantastic defensively. That was to be expected. Outside of that first series in Arizona where he was shaky, he's probably been the Rockies' best all-around player this year. And I will remind you that he is 22 years old. And remember, he got that big, shiny new contract right before the season started. Sometimes we see that and guys come out and, you know, there's pressure of playing under. You're a big money guy now. That was a huge raise for Ezekiel Tovar, by the way. He wasn't making that money before. That's a 22-year-old who just got a massive raise. And, you know, is it going to impact his ego? Is it going to impact his play on the field? Any of that? Nope. Ezekiel Tovar, not only is he the same guy, he's just a better version of what he was last year. It's wild. It almost never happens this way like it would in a video game where progression is kind of linear, right? But Tovar's progression has just been very linear for even going back to the minors. Like, he's just getting consistently better at everything all of the time. And it's really, really fun to watch. Ryan Feltner with another good outing. There's a certain baseball gods funny element to it, right? Of why couldn't they get 12 runs in the game where the starting pitching struggled? Why did they have to back up the one guy who's really cooking right now? Now, he wasn't quite as good as he was in his last outing where he went 6 innings with the 10 strikeouts. He goes 5 innings, 4 strikeouts, 2 earned runs, but very, very quality stuff from Ryan Feltner. He might be the guy right now who, I hate to say it this way, but I feel like he's the only guy you're really getting excited to watch pitch from the starters right now, unless you're really into some of the nuance going on with Cal Quantrill and Dakota Hudson, and I am, and I am. But, you know, obviously with Freeland and Gomber, there's a you want to see him do well, but there's a certain fear, I think, in watching both of those guys pitch right now. With Feltner, there's an excitement that comes with his outings right now that isn't coming with anybody else. A couple other guys, Peter Lambert continues to pitch well. He's now got 10 innings out of the pen this year and has only given up 2 earned runs. That's good for an ERA of 180. He's looked very, very solid. Of course, you know, I'm going to continue to highlight Victor Vodnik, who's now at 10 and 2/3 innings, but he is at 12 and 2/3 going back to last season of not being scored upon. He's got he had 9 strikeouts and 6 walks coming into the game today. I forgot to double check and update that, but the walks are too high. I asked Bud Black about that on the homestand, and he said, yeah, eventually those are going to come around to hurt him. But right now, Victor has got incredible strikeout stuff working for him. He's got the fact that the league doesn't know him as well, so he's a little bit of a surprise, right? Guys haven't gotten a look at him before. He's got a little bit of a funky delivery, massive velo on that fastball, big spin on the slider. And right now, things are looking pretty darned good for Victor Vodnik. Did give up a couple of base hits in the game today, but you'd rather see guys, you know, getting little line drive or low liner or ground ball singles to right field, honestly, even than walking people at this point. I'd be willing to bet a considerable amount of money. I do not have a considerable amount of money, but I would bet it that Bud Black would agree with that every time you'd rather make them earn it. And if the best they can do is shoot a single to right field on your stuff, then you're in a good place, but you can't be giving up free bases. So, and Vodnik did not get any strikeouts or walks today. So that's where the numbers remain. And of course, the final big silver lining, as it was last time, as it will continue to be if he keeps doing what he's doing, is Brenton Doyle. Brenton Doyle gets his 3rd home run of the season there in that game that the Rockies could have come back and won. Like I said, there was also right after the base running mistake, he almost got Diaz off the hook. He hit a ball at 101 miles an hour on a sinker inside that he turned and knocked over the third, like literally knocked over the third baseman with how hard he hit it. He hit the 3rd home run of his season earlier in the game. He had a 3-hit game. He's got the batting average over 300. And oh, by the way, yeah, he's still by far the best defensive center fielder in the game of baseball. And so, yeah, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Whatever offense Brenton Doyle gives you is in many ways gravy. And right now we're kind of drowning in gravy. It is going to get to the point. In fact, I wouldn't even be surprised if starting this next series or maybe by the next homestand, Doyle's moving up in the lineup. You do need to see it for longer. Remember, we measure successes and failures in terms of 100 at-bats in baseball, right? It's you can find those moments, but Doyle looks in every way at the plate. In almost every at-bat, even when he's striking out, he's just better. The swing looks better, the at-bats are better, the contact rate is better, and then the contact quality. He's hitting line drives. Like I said, it's not even like he's getting the success, but then he's also hit several line drives right at people and had some bad luck outs. He could very easily have a few more extra base hits, a few more ribbies. If that ball he had hit in the Saturday game is a foot one direction or the other or a little bit higher, that's another game-tying RBI single, or double probably, for Doyle. So I just couldn't be more elated with the way Brenton Doyle has played so far. A lot of us were hoping for an improvement that would take him from a guy who was, you know, hitting barely over 200 at the end of the year and a WRC plus in the 50s and 60s. that he could maybe bring that up and hit 240 or 250 WRC plus in the 70s or 80s, which would really maximize his defensive value. And now it's like, God, he's been maybe the third best hitter on the team, maybe the second. Again, it's Tovar, McMahon, and Brenton Doyle. And that is, I don't know if it's going to last. Ladies and gentlemen, we don't know. That's why they play the games. But if it does, if this is a real development, if he's going to be, even if he, you know, and it comes down a bit, but if he's going to be a plus hitter, that is a, I know I've said it before, but it really is worth repeating. That's a massive boon for the Colorado Rockies to have a player like that over the next couple of years. And quite frankly, you need to be having conversations now about signing this guy, about locking him down before, because if this continues, he's going to get really, really expensive. Because like we've gone from maybe Brenton Doyle can hit just well enough that his defense makes him an all-star to if Brenton Doyle continues to hit like this, he's going to be a star. And that's pretty fun. Long way to go. A lot of baseball left to play. And pitchers will start making their adjustments. When you do that, just ask Nolan Jones. Just ask Trevor Story. Right? It happens. But most exciting player on the ball team right now is Brenton Doyle. And that's pretty cool after how much he struggled at the plate all of last year. So let me know if there's anything that I didn't talk about that you would have liked me to talk about. I tried to jump around to a bunch of different categories today, and I've got a couple of big picture questions that y'all shot me at on Twitter that I wasn't able to get to last time. So the next conversation I'm going to do is going to be answering those questions, and I've got a deep dive on the prospects. The biggest silver lining of this season, outside of Brenton Doyle, actually, has been how well prospects like Zach Veen, Jordan Beck, Sterling Thompson, and these guys have come out of the gate. There's some great news on the farm, so I'm going to get into that and answer some of your questions next time around. Other than that, I can only ever ask that you continue to be absolutely awesome out there. One other thing that I can ask, actually, is that you follow Mile High Sports on Instagram, TikTok, and all that good stuff, YouTube. But then, I will promise to you that I will continue to be absolutely Drew Kreisman in here. And until next time, I will see you at the ballpark.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.